Welcome to Happily Family. I'm Cecilia Hilke.
And I'm Jason Hilke.
And we're delighted today to have Dr. Laura Markham with us. Laura is the author of Peaceful Parent, Happy Kids and Peaceful Parent, Happy Siblings. She's the founding editor of AHA Parenting, which reaches over 150,000 parents per week. Dr. Laura's aspiration is to change the world one child at a time by supporting parents. Welcome, Laura. It's great to have you.
Great to have you back, Laura.
Great to see you again.
Thanks.
We wanted to ask you about stress, because that is something that parents are dealing with a lot. And I think the temptation when I'm stressed as a parent, and when a lot of people in our audience are talking about stress as parents, is to like kind of like clamp down on our parenting and to like send the peaceful parenting stuff like out the window. Like, we need to do parenting differently now. What are your thoughts about that? Should we throw peaceful parenting out the window because we're all so stressed, or should we like stick to what we're doing?
Well, when we get stressed, we're not known for our excellent cognitive skills. So we often do things that may not be in our best interest or our children's best interest, but it doesn't mean those are the wise things to do that we would do if we were acting in accordance with our values or, you know, looking at what's for everybody's highest good. So maybe we should back up for a minute and just look at stress. So stress, my definition of stress, is when there are things coming at you from outside and you don't feel you have the inner resource. You could also use that as a definition of overwhelm. And when we're stressed, we're overwhelmed, right? Because stress isn't necessarily what's actually happening out here, right? Something could be happening out here that is the same for you as for someone else, and that other person might be completely overwhelmed by it. And you might be like, yeah, this is a normal week at my house, right? So you know, that might be it. Or you might be that person who's overwhelmed, or someone else, it doesn't faze them. You know, you think about like a really great preschool teacher who's got, you know, 20 kids and there's pandemonium. I mean, you all know this because you've done this, right? And yet that teacher is like, they've got their hand on one kid and they're talking to another kid and they look up and say, Brian, you know, to the other kid. They've got it. They're in the dance, you know? So they're not stressed by that preschool classroom the way someone else, many of us might be, right? So I think stress is about helping ourselves to develop the inner resource to cope with what's coming at us, and to whatever degree is possible to manage what's coming at us from outside. And sometimes what's coming at us is stuff you really can't control, you know, from our society or from our three-year-old, but some of it you really can. You know, if you give the three-year-old a nap, there's going to be less to deal with from the three-year-old later in the day, right? If you, you know, if you set up the rules in your household so that your kids, you know, they feel they want to cooperate with your rules, they're less likely to be going over to somebody else's house and looking at porn secretly on the computer, right? If you've had conversations with them about that. So I think for all of us, there will always be things we don't foresee coming at us. There will always be days that just feel like too much. So it is our responsibility to do everything we can to maintain our own sense of well-being so we have resources to draw on, absolutely. But to some degree, we can also organize our lives to have at least a little bit of a fighting chance to not be so stressed.
Actually, can I say something real quick?
Go,
it just reminded me so much of when we were preschool teachers. What you just said there really, really hit home, because we did things. We structured the classroom in such a way so that when we were stressed, or we would do things so that we wouldn't be as stressed, so that things could be easier to manage. So things were more known. Like that was part of just the survival of a classroom. But the same thing can be applied at home. And I can see that, like us talking about what are our plans for the day? You know, when our kids were young, well, even when our kids are older, we still talk about what are your plans for the day? Like that kind of thing just helps, in for me at least, not to be stressed out when all of a sudden they're gone at dinner time when I thought we were all having dinner together, and all of a sudden I'm stressed to get dinner figured out. Like there's just all these things that we can put into place and these structures so that we can be more successful and hopefully have less stress. So that made a lot of sense to me as I think about our classroom experiences as well.
And on that, on your coattails, I wanted to ask you, Laura, like what sorts of structures do do you find really helpful for families to put in place when they're feeling stressed that are not overly confining, but allow that, you know, the child to be themselves and the parents to be themselves?
Well, I think we could look at what do we all need in order to be at our best, right? We know, for instance, that kids need physical activity. If they've been cooped up inside all weekend, or, you know, it's been raining like crazy and they haven't been able to go outside even at school or whatever, we know that kid needs some physical exercise. But I would even say outdoor time is different than indoor time. You know, you can have a family dance party as a fallback. That's always a really good one. But being out in nature, we now know, changes us. It changes our body chemistry. And the same thing is true for our children, of course. And so, you know, I would just say all kids need time outside. All kids need connection time with each parent. All kids need some downtime where they're not, where they don't have screens and they don't have a lot of noise, where things, you know, start to calm down in their house in the evening, let's say. You know, all kids need, you know, I mentioned connection time, but I didn't really elaborate. Kids need several different kinds in order to thrive. So one thing they need is they need one-on-one time with each parent. And, you know, they don't have to have it every day, but if they have it every day, they thrive on it, you know. So some one-on-one time with each parent that is designated time for them that they know they can count on is important. Another kind of connection they need is when things are hard, when the parent's correcting them, directing them, you know, telling them that they're doing something wrong, you know, whatever, when they're feeling like some negativity is coming their way, to have that be cushioned in so that they also feel the connection at the same time. And the way you would do that is pretty simple. You would just be acknowledging, oh, I can see you really wanted to start that project. You're so excited about it. And it's almost time for dinner. It's really not the time to get out that big project. I know you were so excited about doing it. It's pretty disappointing to have me say this. I hear, I understand. Let's think about when we could get you started on this project that would be okay, right? So you're, it's a softer landing for your direction of the child, basically. So that's a kind of connection. It's a connection that is understanding and empathy when you're asking them to rise to the occasion. That's a connection. And another kind of connection is laughter. Laughter is the shortest distance between any two people. And it's not something we can really describe or analyze or understand in a way. We can do our best, but you know, it happens beyond the realm of the intellect. And it actually changes again. It changes our body chemistry, reduces the stress hormones, increases those feel-good neurotransmitters and hormones, including oxytocin, the bonding hormone. So the child is more willing to cooperate with you. So a lot of times when things are stressful, a great tool to use is slow everything down. So you're de-escalating and then find a way to start. You may still have a serious problem that you have to come back to, but if you can get everybody laughing, you're halfway there, right? Because we all let go of the baggage that was getting us all ready to fight. And now we're like, you know, we're laughing with each other and we remember our connection and we can work things out more easily. So, you know, when we think about stress and what parents can actually do, there are certain practices that you could, in the same way you set up a preschool classroom by having certain practices, we all sing the cleanup song and we clean up before lunch. And it, that way it's not a power struggle to clean up every day. It's like, this is just what we do. Well, there are certain practices like that. Like we have a family meeting at our house every Sunday night with pizza or with, you know, ice cream afterwards or whatever it is that we do that makes it our family meeting. And we work on our plans for the week together or anything that's, you know, was a big bump, you know, or maybe we have a practice of, you know, every single day we all sit down to dinner together. And the days when somebody has practice or something and can't come, okay, but we have a tradition of that and we do rose and thorn with each other. So we at least know something about what's going on in each other's worlds during that day. I mean, we could go on and on. I wouldn't want someone listening to feel overwhelmed by this. I would more want them to look at it as, oh, here's all these possible ways to de-stress our family and connect more. And we could increase our sense of well-being by taking care of ourselves and each other. What works for our family? What are the things that would work, two or three things that would work every day, or two or three things that would work every week that we could do?
Nice.
I like that. Let me see if I can remember everything you just said there. You said, so having daily practices, and you were talking about like whether it's meals or get togethers, family meetings. I'm going to work backwards. You also talked about having kind of playful parenting or having fun, bringing laughter into it. You talked about having time outside.
Time outside.
And also one-on-one time, whether it's daily or just regularly. And I like that. And I also really liked what you said there that, you know, that can be overwhelming to think about like all these things. That's all more. That's something we hear often from parents. Great, more than I need to do. Rather than looking at it as being more, like choosing something that fits into what you already do. And also just choosing one or two, like keeping it simple and then adding to that. So I really like that you said that, because I think that's something that we as parents, especially parents that are watching this, typically they're wanting to change things. They're wanting to be different. They're wanting to change their parenting. And so they want to tackle everything and they take everything possible. So I think that's really valuable advice. And also for them to look at what works for them. I like that advice that you gave there. Like, find out for yourself, like, what is it that helps you? What's the structure for you? What de-escalates stress for you in your family? And take those practices on.
There's another tip that goes with what you're saying, which is that you could think of it in terms of things you're doing anyway that you could just tweak a little. So it's not even adding something else. You know, if you're going to be eating dinner anyway, instead of having dinner collapse into the children making stupid jokes at each other and elbowing each other and, you know, whatever, and you're trying desperately to think of something. Well, how was school today? You know, or trying to get some conversation going. You know, you could tweak that by having something that happens regularly at dinner that, you know, maybe you rotate and a different kid is the dinner chairperson or the dinner facilitator every night. Maybe that's something you do, and that their job is to ask people about their thorn and their rose, which I won't explain because I assume people know what they are. They can Google it. But, you know, maybe it's something you can just tweak a little bit. And another example would be that maybe you're already putting your kids to bed at night and reading them a story. And maybe you just want to add to that a few minutes after lights are out, where you just lie with your child in the sun. And maybe you say one. And of course, yours will be about your something to do with. So it doesn't have to be, you know, shoehorning something else into your crowded life. It can just be tweaking things you're already doing.
I like that. That's a great reminder. It reminded me of like one of the things we do is often, not often, but occasional dinners are game night dinners where we'll eat and play games and we laugh and we have fun. And so we're doing, you know, we're having fun and laughing while we're also having a dinner that we're going to have anyhow. So just fitting those in. So it's not yet another thing to do.
Yeah. And I would also wanted to speak to the parents, because I am often in this category too, that it's overwhelming to think of more things to do, because it feels like it takes more time. And yet it's that paradoxical thing. Even though our kids are now teens, if we feel connected, they're more likely to want to like help out with the dishes and clean the bathroom and vacuum.
Like less stress or less.
Yeah.
Strife,
there's just like less stress in general. If we're more connected, I'm less fearful. I'm not so tight with them. So it's this really paradoxical thing that even just like last night, I was like, okay, kids, like, we're going to go do something. It's going to change your life. You're never going to forget it. Like, no questions asked, like get on your warm clothes. And we went out, we just like went for a walk at nighttime and we went out and we like yelled something in the, just for fun, like something that we liked about ourselves, totally goofy, not hard to do, had to wear some warm enough clothes. And that was connecting in a way that now I feel some lightness and some ease, and it's a little easier to get the other things done that I was kind of stressed about.
Yeah. I love that. And, you know, we talked about cushioning those moments of direction and correction, you know, with empathy. Sometimes parents will say, well, you know, I really don't have time to go over there and tell them to put the project away and have a whole conversation about it. I'm getting dinner on the table. Yes. But think about that extra 1 minute, literally that extra 60 seconds you spent empathizing with him, versus the 20-minute knockdown, drag out, meltdown, screaming fest you would have had otherwise and ruin everybody's evening, right? So I do think that what you're saying, Cecilia, about when there's connection, everything is so much more smooth.
Yeah, it makes a big difference. Okay, I wanted to ask you about something that parents are saying right now, that they're stressed and they really want to start using incentives to like incentivize kids to get chores done, get homework done. What do you think about
that? Especially because during the pandemic, there was a lot of difficulty with parents trying to figure out like, how do I do school at home and be a parent? And some of the teachers were really pushing hard for kids to be incentivized with punishments or rewards. And that was the angle they were coming with. And now they're trying to figure out like, how do I balance that? How do I balance that now? How do I balance that in the future with the way that I want to be parenting? So I wonder if you could talk, I mean, it's a bit of a big conversation, but I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about that.
Okay. So incentives. I mean, what's an incentive? An incentive is a way to get someone else to do something. That's what it is. And sometimes the incentive comes from inside. Somebody will get a lot of pleasure out of doing that thing. You know, I had one kid who actually liked to organize her room and line everything up. She got some satisfaction out of that. Go figure. I didn't teach it to her, you know. I mean, I tried to teach it to her, but I tried to teach it to her brother too, and it didn't work with him. So, you know. So incentives are something usually that we are trying to get someone to do that is not coming from inside them, right? Teachers, I would say that what I saw during the pandemic in general is that teachers were heroic in trying to help kids learn in a way that was completely not developmentally appropriate. And not even for teenagers to be learning on Zoom. Nobody wants to be on Zoom all day. I mean, what a god-awful thing, right? For anybody. It's not appropriate for teenagers. It's not appropriate for 10-year-olds. And it's not appropriate for 6-year-olds, right? So teachers did their best to help kids to focus. But we, you know, as the dust settles from the pandemic, we're starting to see how many kids got lost along the way or didn't, you know, who got depressed and anxious along the way or who weren't really able to complete their homework or just fell behind in various things. I think it was just, we did our best as a society to pull through and to go on with life as usual for our kids and give them some school. But it's not like that was a normal incentivizing situation for any child, right? So some kids, when they're in the classroom and they're connecting with their teacher and they're there with the other kids and the other kids are working away on their short story, that kid's going to be like, yeah, I want to do my short story too. But that same kid, when they're home in front of Zoom, they're going to need a different incentive because the relationship, right? So teachers are not experts in psychology. That's not what their forte is. They're doing the best they can to get kids to do the work with the tools that the teacher's been given. And the tools the teachers have handy are usually carrots and sticks. They don't really know what else to do. So incentivizing kids from their perspective, what they would say to the parents is, no, you have to make the kid do this. And the parents going, look, I can't make my kid sit in front of Zoom any longer. I can't make my kid write this short story. They're complaining their hand hurts. They, you know, they give me a fuss or a fight every time I try to sit them down to do any kind of schoolwork. You know, the number of stories from parents that have struggled with their kids' remote schooling. I mean, virtually everybody. It's a rare child that made it easy for the parent. And so many parents were also trying to do it around the edges of their own work life, which is not an easy thing. In fact, let me just say it's impossible. Just for the record, it's an impossible thing to do. Okay, so incentivizing kids, this, let's just say the whole pandemic time period, what did we actually learn? We learned that children rely on relationship to be incentivized. That's what we learned, and that carrots and sticks really didn't work. So if we got used to using them because that's what the teacher said, what were we actually doing? Well, we might have been bribing them, right, with something that we didn't think was too terrible, right? But bribes, what is the problem with bribes? Well, there are two problems. One is that you're not doing something out of your own value system. You're like, I don't really want to give my kid all these M&Ms, but I'm giving them the M&Ms and doling them out every time they get one of their math problems done because it's the only way they're going to sit there and do their arithmetic, right? So that's one problem. And the other problem is with bribes that your child begins to say, well, what are you going to give me if you don't have any M&Ms? I'm not going to do that homework, right? So the dynamic gets a little skewed because the child doesn't see that there's any other reason. There's no inherent gratification or reward for the child in doing the homework because you've been bribing them. And that's bribes, which are actually much better than the punishments. So let's think about what sticks we have. We're going to remove your privileges. I'm not going to read you a story later. Well, arguably reading them a story might be the most important academic thing that happens today, right? So, you know, and if the teacher is doling out or telling the parents to dole out sticks, punishments, then what's happening to the child's relationship with the teacher and the child's relationship to learning, right? So I think in general, the research is pretty clear on this, that when we use rewards and punishment, it does not help kids find the inherent gratification of, as my daughter did, organizing her room herself and seeing the joy in that. Or I did that math problem myself. I was stumped, but I worked at it and I got it. And now I can do the next one, right? That's what we want for all our children. That's what we build on. And if anyone is wondering about the research, just go look up Alfie Cohn's work, KOHN, because he's an academic who has spent his entire life. He's mostly worked within the educational system in his theorizing and the research that he's compiled, but he's very good at showing you the research to back up these points. It's all there in his books. So that's rewards and punishment. Now, if you're just talking about how hard the pandemic year was and how do we get kids to do their chores, I actually saw some families use the pandemic time to change the relationship with chores because the kids were home all the time, because all of a sudden everyone's eating three meals a day at home. All of a sudden, I mean, it used to be everybody sort of barely, eat anything and get out of the house. I mean, you'd be trying to get your kid to, some people are feeding them peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, in the car on the way to school or whatever. You're trying to get your kids out of the house in the morning. Maybe you've had breakfast. Nobody's eating lunch at home. And then in the evening, there's a meal. Now, suddenly, there's three meals and a bunch of snacks and everybody's grazing all day long. There's constant dirty dishes. There's constant cooking to do, right? And not to mention that bathroom's getting used a lot more than it usually did. Suddenly there's a lot more work. So the families that I know that made it through the pandemic with better relationships figured out a way to get the kids working on those chores with the parents. And when I say with, I actually mean with. I don't mean telling them to go do it. Even the 10-year-olds or even the 14-year-olds, really. I mean, at least in the beginning, doing it with the parent. So if you're with your 14-year-old and you're cleaning that toilet together, your 14-year-old's getting a really good lesson about the future. They're going to know how to clean a toilet, which everybody needs to know how to do. And they're going to appreciate somebody who's cleaning their toilet in the future. If they're at college and somebody cleans their dorm toilet, they're going to be really appreciative and not entitled. And, there's going to be plenty of toilets for them to clean in their future. So that's one thing that happens. What's another thing that happens? They see you rolling up your sleeves and doing what needs to be done. So there's some really fabulous research about effort. And they've even done it with babies, where they've had babies watch somebody try to open something that's hard to open. And if the person, the adult, gives up after just, a short time, a couple seconds, when the baby is given a task to do, it could be the same task or a different one. The baby tries it for a few seconds and tosses it away. But if the adult really works at it and tries hard to do it and says, this is hard, but I'm not going to give up. I'm talking about nonverbal babies. Right? Babies who are not able to express this happening or really understand, but they see it. And the adult does it for like a couple of minutes and the baby's like really into it and the adult's successful. Then you give the baby either that task or some other, the baby. That's what we want for our kids. So if you're there cleaning the bathroom with your kid and you're like, yeah, but don't you the streaks in the mirror, don't they just bother you when you're brushing your teeth? Come on, let's see if we can get those off together. You're giving your kids lessons, not just about the bathroom, but about how to achieve and be successful for the rest of their lives. I mean, the opportunity that you get when you do a chore with a kid is worth so much. Parents sometimes say, I do not have time. I want to just tell my kid to go clean the bathroom. I get it. We all feel that way. But this, again, think about all the things you're teaching by doing this with your child, not to mention the bonding. And that if you do this with your kid for a couple of months, your kid will take over and be able to clean the bathroom themselves. What an amazing thing. That's the way to get kids to do chores. It isn't about, you know, carrots and sticks. I mean, if it is, I think it should be a very small part, meaning it's completely fine if we all work together to clean the house on Saturday mornings. And before we go do other activities, this is what we do. And then we all come together for high fives and telling each other an appreciation. And then we go on about our day. That's not really a carrot or stick. It's more like when we've cleaned up, then we can go on with our other things. So I really can't imagine a carrot or stick that would be anywhere near as effective as anything we've already done.
Yeah, I love the whole point of just like, let's do chores with our kids. There's so many great benefits to that. And it's even reminding me, like, stuff like that is fun for adults too. When I've got some neighbors that when they get together and they do their finances in non-pandemic times, they'll get together in the same house just because it's kind of icky to like balance their checkbook or pay their bills. But they come together and they just parallel play. They don't help each other or anything, but they're just in each other's presence. And we can do the same thing with chores. We could literally help each other out with that. But also even with work, like our kids maybe can be doing their schoolwork while I'm doing my work, and we can kind of parallel play it. Just being in each other's presence for chores or work or unpleasant things makes them more pleasant.
It's funny, actually, as you said that, you know, during the pandemic, because everyone's around all the time, our kids get to see like what we do, like when they're not here, right? Like usually when they're at school, and it's like, oh, so this is how it happens. And things started to change and evolve, at least in our house, where our kids were like, well, why don't I help out with that? Like, that was not at all what I expected to have happen. So it's interesting that in some ways, what you're also talking about is making it explicitly evident to them, like really modeling and having them see it, doing it with them also, which is fantastic. But if they don't know what's going on, like, that bathroom gets cleaned magically in some cases, like I just don't even know it. And if I'm not motivated internally to do it, then when I get older, no one's paying me or giving me any carrots to do my own bathroom in my own apartment. And it's harder. It's definitely a skill that we can help our kids build. So I really like that. That's a life skill right there. And I think the pandemic gave us an opportunity to really learn from that. Like, that's some real positive that came out of this. Do you have something else you wanted to say?
Well, yeah. I mean, just that we get when we do something and we're intrinsically motivated, we get the satisfaction of having that be done, having the clean bathroom, your daughter with all of her stuff lined up, that's where the joy comes from. All the math problems that get done, having that be an enjoyable experience. Yeah. My emails that get read and responded to, that can be an enjoyable experience. Is that what you're talking about, Dr. Laura?
Totally, totally. And I think, you know, there's more to life than checking things off our lists, but every kid needs to learn that sometimes just to get through life, you know, there's a list and there are things we need to check off, and we all, you know, we get satisfaction out of doing it. I think that's a great thing. And also that we work together as a family, that's what a family does.
There's something about doing that reduces stress, it seems like, you know, feeling accomplished, feeling like we're chipping away at it. So I could see how this would also address some of the concerns and difficulties we've all had with stress, not just the parents, but also the kids.
Yeah. And I think stress also goes away when we feel competent in a situation.
Yes.
Like if our kids can feel competent, even if it's feeling competent about cleaning the bathroom or about making a meal or putting away dishes, like that is an area that we can help our kids have a sense of accomplishment, especially, you know, in the pandemic times when it was harder for kids to be intrinsically motivated to do school. It seemed separate from, like, not as real, not as relevant, to be doing Zoom schooling rather than in-person schooling. So,
yeah. That's good.
And you know, creating order also reduces stress, right? You know, Kim John Payne, who his theory is simplicity parenting, right? You know, just teaching kids that when they look at an environment that feels overwhelming to them, they can just notice and begin restoring order to that environment. And as they do that, their own, and they're more able to then think clearly and be focused.
Which is funny. It goes back to what we were talking about earlier, is how can we create order in the family for reducing our stress as a parent? It also works for our kids. You know, like you said, Dr. Laura, you know, we could talk to you forever about this stuff. This is just, it's always fun talking to you. As we're wrapping up, do you have any final words, or do you have a big ask for folks?
I have a challenge. My challenge is, I would ask every parent who is listening to consider what they could start doing differently right now, starting today or tomorrow, what they could do differently that would increase their sense of well-being, because that's not something. What that does is it gives you the inner resources to be the best parent you can. And so often, parents who want to be the best parents they can be, they're all about giving, giving, giving. And that's, you know, that's great, but we can only give what we have. If you're depleted, you know, you can't be running on empty and actually be the parent. So my challenge is to look at what you can do that you can make a practice. And it could be something very small. It could be that I'm going to listen to a guided meditation for 3 minutes every night before I fall asleep. That'd be an example of one. Or don't make it into a big thing like every day I'm going to work out for an hour. Because if you're a parent, you probably don't have that time. But it could be every day I'm going to do X thing for 3 minutes to start, or 10 minutes. That you can probably do. So that would be my challenge.
I like that. I think that's something great that all parents, myself included, could always take on, some way to take care of myself a little bit better. And it's one of those things I think I forget to do often. I think many parents forget.
Yeah.
And it's so
especially
valuable
in times of stress.
Yeah.
We forget those things or push those things off the to-do list the quickest.
So good talking to you.
Off our list, right? We it's not sustainable to push ourselves off our list.
So true. So good talking to you again. Thank you for taking this time. How could people find out more about you and all the resources that you have and your books online? What could they do?
So my books are, my name is Laura Markham, and you can find my books anywhere books are sold, in hard version, you know, like in a real bookstore, bricks and mortar, or online. And my website is ahaparenting.com, ahaparenting.com. And that's just for those aha moments when you suddenly have an insight and realize, oh, this could be different. And because that's my wish for every parent and every child, that we have those. And I would add that I have a meditation that's a very short meditation, a grounding meditation that parents say really helps them de-stress, that I would like to just offer for free to your listeners. And we can, you know, put that in the show notes or whatever works.
Yeah, we'll do that. Thank you for that. That's very generous of you. I'll put that in the speaker notes. People can get to that through that link. And thank you for taking the time to talk to us. It's so valuable, what you're offering for parents all the time, but especially in times of stress, and making such a difference for the lives of parents and the kids. And thank you for all the work you've done. You know, you've had a lifetime of work that's just really paying off. We really appreciate that. Thanks for talking to us, and we look forward to talking to you again in the future. Bye-bye.
It's my pleasure. Bye-bye.